CBS Live Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, founder of the UK charity Yes to Life and host for the show, which focuses on integrative medicine for cancer, or integrative oncology, an inclusive approach that capitalizes on the benefits of conventional lifestyle and traditional medicine. Today's show is on a subject that I know little of beyond hearing from credible sources of its benefits to people with cancer. It's firmly in the traditional medicine camp with a very long heritage, although not here in Europe. Qigong is an ancient art from China, and I've contacted Alessandro Ferulli, who I'm hoping will enlighten me about Qigong and how it might help people with cancer. Hi Alessandro, thanks very much for coming on the Yes Live Show today.
Hi Robin, nice to be here.
So, Michael Lerner, who was the founder of the Commonweal Centre in California and author of one of the most highly respected books about unconventional approaches to cancer from the 1990s. It was called Choices in Healing, and it had a subtitle as Integrating the Best of Conventional and Complementary Approaches. Well, Michael, in that book, he couldn't say enough about how great Qigong was for people with cancer. To this day, I still don't know all that much about Qigong, I must say, and I don't think many people with cancer do either. Why was he so enthusiastic about Qigong for people with cancer?
Right. So I think in my experience, I've been studying Qigong for about 25 years. I've met a lot of Qigong masters, obviously been with mine for that long. But one of the interesting things, and, you know, on the internet, there's a lot of information these days, you know, on Qigong hospitals, for example, in China. And right. A lot of these Qigong hospitals is where people with terminal illnesses go, you know, who've been sent home to die. And they have something like 80% success rate in people recovering.
Oh,
and
right.
Some of the, and you can look them up. If you look up Qigong hospitals, I can't remember specific names, but, you know, things change. So sometimes you can find this information, sometimes you can't, because in China, Qigong sometimes has become politicized, yeah. And some Qigong is banned and things like that. So it's a bit of a, you know, in the West, it's almost better known now than over there, because they've had a few issues over there.
Okay.
So Qigong hospitals, you can look up. And one of the, for example, techniques they use, which would seem quite extreme to us in the West, is that you don't eat anything for the first, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, you know. And if you're terminally ill, that would, for most people, that would freak them out. But you are practicing Qigong. You are getting energy. Energy is flowing around the body. So you're not just there, you know, starving yourself. You are getting energy from a different source. And the way the Chinese system and Chinese medicine sees it is you're not feeding the cancer. You know, in other words, food is food for the body, but can also be food for the cancer cell. So if you're starving them, but the body is working with energy and guided in a guided way, the body then can maybe begin recovering, and then you eat again, obviously, and, you know, they keep a close eye when you become healthier.
Mm.
So that's quite, you know, quite interesting. And also I have seen personally, you know, Qigong masters, for example, you know, removing tumors from people in a number of, you know, 15, 20 minutes. So, you know, when you've seen those things happen, and of course you can look them up on YouTube, there's lots of examples, and they're not tricks. But you know, you have to warn people, you know, it's not an easy thing. You know, whoever's doing it, this master has millions of followers. It's a skill he was born with. It's not something, you know, that's easy to do. And I think one of the main things is that he can't do that for everyone. Sometimes with illness, it's a very tricky thing, but sometimes no matter how much he would like to help somebody, he may not be able to. There are some things that are out of our hands as humans, no matter what, you know, what, how an amazing healer we are. So, you know, I've seen it myself. Hospitals exist. And I think because it's a practice that's been around for thousands of years, It has a tradition, and it has a very deep sort of philosophy behind it.
Okay, well, I want to know a lot more about those. I'm very interested to hear that this idea that they people start off by not eating for 2 or 3 weeks. I personally know somebody who actually the only thing they did about their terminal diagnosis was go on a 1 month fast, which did the trick, which turned it around. So I can well see that that's a good plan to start with, but very interesting indeed. I also noticed that I said the name of this practice rather badly. You called it Qigong, yes, rather than Qigong, which was what I said. So Qigong is the kind of authorized way of saying it, is that right?
Yeah, there are many different ways. I mean, in America, QI, they wouldn't really use or pronounce it. They spell it CHI. So right. That's also Qi, same thing. And yep. Gong is the way the Chinese would pronounce it.
Okay.
So,
all right, I've learned something there. Right, great. So let's start with the basics then. So what exactly is Qigong? And for that matter, what's the Qi bit all about? What's the story behind it? Where did it come from? When did it start?
Okay, so the history is hard to put a date on it, but it is thousands of years. I'd say a minimum of 1,000 years. Some people say 4,000 years old as a practice. And really, it's the practice of, you know, deepening our perception as human beings and realizing actually, observing nature, observing the cosmos, observing the flow of energy in and out of the body. So it's a study of nature, of humans, of the cosmos, all mixed into one. And qi is the energy that keeps us alive and makes nature thrive, helps nature thrive, makes things alive. And, if we could live just by eating and breathing, then we could live forever just by eating and breathing. But the Chinese have this concept, which in the West we don't tend to have a word for it, that the qi is the vital energy that is in the universe and in the humans. And when we qigong is the connection of our energy with the universal energy to heal us, to keep us alive, to inspire us. So the practice of qigong is taking time to connect with this energy. So in a way, yoga would be considered a qigong practice, even though it's Indian. Yoga is an energy practice for the body, for the mind, and connecting to the universal energy as well. But nowadays, some of these practices have become a bit commercialized. So, even things like yoga sometimes have tend to have lost their kind of the spiritual connection aspect. People do it for stretching, for exercise, but it's way beyond that. And same with Qigong. I think ultimately it's a practice to connect us with this universal energy that keeps us alive. And the more we can stay connected, the healthier and more, joyful we are as well.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you. So how about telling us a bit about yourself now? Why you got involved with Qigong, how you trained, your experience, and particularly, of course, I'm interested to know anything that you've done in relation to people with cancer.
Yeah, I think I started just by chance. I found myself in a church in Kentish Town somewhere about 28 years ago with this Qigong teacher, master now, called Master Zhijing Wang, and there are about six of us in this hall, and I wasn't sure what I was doing there. I'd never heard of Qigong before, but I had nothing on that weekend, so I just went along, and I could feel something between my hands, which was this qi energy, and it was a kind of light bulb moment where I thought, there's something here that's intangible, but actually I can sense it in my fingers, which is beyond the material. I think previous to that, to me, the world was very material. It was, my car, my house, other people, things I could touch and see. Suddenly there was this invisible energy or force. And I just looked into it more deeply. you know, followed my teacher. And I didn't come from illness myself, thank goodness, but I saw so many people's, you know, illnesses sort of transform. It sort of inspired me, you know, to stay healthy. Then one of the Qigong principles is, you know, if you're a good practitioner, you have to share these things. So I kind of went into sharing it with others, which became kind of teaching it. So I just sort of, it's a natural sort of flow, if you like, that it went from being curious to sensing some changes in my life to improving my life, you know, on many levels, and then helping other people improve theirs. And what I love about it, it's non-religious, non-political, so it doesn't actually conflict. Sometimes people say I'm a Muslim, I'm a Christian, will it, you know, conflict with God? Going back to the qi, actually, you know, if you say, look, this all comes from God, it's fine. You know, there's no need to kind of, you know, give it a different name. And even the Chinese, do you know the Tao Te Ching, by the way? The Tao Te Ching?
Not really.
Okay, it's a book by Lao Tzu, and the Tao is the way, if you like. It's something very mysterious that you can call it God, but the minute you give it a name in the Tao Te Ching, they say it's not the name you give it. So what is this force? Even when you say qi, that limits it. It's something beyond what can be described. So if people want to call it, you know, natural law, it's fine. It doesn't have to be, you know, the qi, you know, universal consciousness, I think Jung called it the field of all possibilities. Oprah calls it all that is. You know, there's something mysterious beyond us, and I felt it, and I've been connecting with it, you know, every day since, and I've seen incredible results with other people. And we can talk more about the kind of more serious illnesses, if you like, in a minute.
Yes, I'd love to. Okay, well, in fact, let's get into that. I'd like to talk about cancer specifically, obviously, because that's what this show is all about. And so you've already said a bit about why people with cancer could be interested. So can we get specific now about all the kind of different situations that Qigong could be helpful in and the ways it could be helpful?
Yeah, definitely. I think cancer is such a big topic and a tricky subject. I think that, you know, one of the main things about energy in the body is it needs to flow through the body, around the body, a bit like the blood circulation. But the qi is a separate thing that goes through the meridians, the channels. Now, if the energy is blocked in the body, then things, you know, build up. If emotions are blocked in the body, things build up. And I think a lot of cancer is things that are possibly building up. It could be toxins. It could be emotions that are suppressed. It's a very tricky thing to put one's finger on as to why people get it. But I know when I was with a Qigong master who treats tumors, and he's been doing it like for 40 years, you know, he said something very interesting. He said, it's almost like the body has lost, like the memory of the cells has gone a bit haywire. Cancer is when the cells are, you know, growing or destroying themselves or destroying the immune system. Mm. So in Qigong, you're kind of erasing that memory. Often that memory in the cells that's making them not do what they're meant to be doing is due to a trauma. You know, very often in the cases I saw where he was removing tumors, he actually said to the lady, do you remember when this tumor appeared? And it was like 12 years previously. I think it was a divorce, you know, a lot of trauma. So he was talking about, you know, that every problem has a root to it. It's like a, you know, and the flower, you know, the flower that appears is the tumor, but the root of it is, you know, something we need to connect to as well. You know, we can't just, you know, take out a tumor and leave the trauma, whatever that was, because often it can come back. So in the Chinese way of looking at it is that if you can keep your immune system healthy, hopefully you can prevent you can prevent things like cancer. And also you can become much more aware if you are having issues with your health. You know, cancer doesn't usually happen suddenly, although people tend to discover it suddenly. The body often is giving us many signals in advance. Mm. But if we're not really connected to the body, then the cancer suddenly has us, as it were, you know. So I think if we can prevent it in the first place is the best thing. Mm-hmm. If we've got it, then it's a matter of what if we can get the energy flowing around the body can detox more, we can purify the blood. These are all things that we do through Qigong practice. The body can begin healing itself. We don't always need external, like you said yourself, your friend who fasted for a month, you know, that we're taking control of it. We're kind of, you know, erasing the memory, we're elevating, you know, our own emotions, you know, or state around it, and we're kind of taking control of it. But often it takes control of us, and I think it's to let go of that fear and know that there is something we can do, and Qigong happens to be one way or path. So I think prevention then can be a cure, and also we're going to talk about post-treatment as well. I think it can really help to detox the body from all the toxins from, you know, whatever treatment we've had, mm-hmm. you know, build up the immune system and give us more energy on a daily basis. Because, you know, everybody, I mean, my mum sadly passed of leukemia. I mean, I saw after her second chemotherapy, she had nothing left. She had no energy. She couldn't walk, you know. Unfortunately, you know, Qigong wasn't an option because my brother was, you know, doesn't agree with it, and, you know, my sister. And so anyway, it was a tricky one, even though my mother kind of believed in it. And, you know, so anyway, it can be used, you know, at different stages. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right. Okay. And well, a couple of things. One, I'd like to just skip back. There was, when you started talking about this, you were talking about the loss of cell memory, if you like, was when the cells of the body are not actually behaving as they should because they've forgotten how they're supposed to behave effectively and taken on this being kind of immortal. And you also spoke about Qigong in terms of being your connectedness, if you like, to the force of the universe. Somebody who is a regular on this show, Liz Butler, she speaks about cancer, which is something she has a huge amount of experience with, as being a loss of connection. That's how she describes it, quite interestingly. Mm-hmm. And this kind of chimes in with what you're saying there, that what has happened here is that the person is not connected properly to the universe, the energies of the universe, the life force that keeps them well, and therefore things that are able to go wrong. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. I think there's two things here. One is this connection to the energy of the universe, but it's also really important the connection to our body and, you know, where in our body, you know, are we actually living? You know, the other day I saw Greg Braden. I don't know if you've heard of him, who's an American kind of scientist who works a lot with health and consciousness, human consciousness. And he was saying we're the only form of life that can harmonize the mind and the heart. But the mind and the brain is a polarity organ. So it's just yin and yang, good and bad, this and that. Whereas the heart discerns truth. And, you know, when we can, in Qigong, we connect the mind or the brain with the heart. And healing comes, a lot of it comes from in the internal body, how we feel about ourselves, how we actually are connecting. But if we don't connect with the body on a deeper level, then it's very hard to connect with the universal energy. So it's a two, we need both things. And in Qigong, we drop down often to the heart, and the heart is, you know, the organ of truth. The heart is where the true healing comes from. And the brain or the mind is where the ego lives. And the ego often is what, you know, causes a lot of the issues. So in Qigong, you're kind of disconnecting from the ego a bit. We can't get rid of it. You connect with the body, connect the body with this energy. So the connection is a very important word, but it's to be understood that it's not enough to just connect externally. We have to go deep into the body. And sometimes in Qigong, you can bring the energy, the light to that area as well. You can work specifically. But I think one of the things I love about Qigong is you usually focus on health. You don't focus on the problem. So say somebody has a tumor somewhere, you don't generally focus on that area. You focus on the whole body. You focus on the energy connection, staying in tune with it. Then the body can heal itself, and the chi goes to where it's needed. It has an intelligence. You know, it's something beyond our own mind and will. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty and mystery of it, that there's always hope. When we connect with this energy, you know, we've all seen it, you know, seen what looks like a miracle, but it's not really. It's just, it's natural. We as humans are connected to something beyond us. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when we close up, the body becomes closed up, and you know, it becomes like a field of, you know, that might attract problems. And I think cancer sometimes is just, as we said, the body not doing what it's meant to. It's unnatural, actually.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, can you think about Qigong in terms of helping to manage very specific aspects of going through cancer and through cancer treatment? I mean, there's lots of things people have to deal with going through treatment particularly. Can you just think about Qigong in a specific way like that, or is it much more general?
No, I think you can think of it in a specific way. There are many different kinds of Qigong. There's, you know, the martial arts kind of Qigong, more meditative, just sitting. The form I study is a self-healing form and that I teach. So it's a very simple, gentle form that helps to reorganize the energy system. So it can be done when somebody is very ill. They can do it in bed. It can be done standing up when somebody's healthy as a prevention. And it can be done also being when people are really ill and quite still. There are exercises to do with breathing where you can help to purify the blood. I mean, most illnesses, you know, especially things like cancer, are impurities in the blood where the blood either isn't flowing freely or it's not clearing the toxins. So if we can be sitting or lying down, for example, in bed quite ill, and do some breathing to purify the blood, to connect with this energy in stillness, because actually even in stillness there's a lot of movement going on. So we can connect by being still, we can connect by moving, we can connect by doing more physical things and less physical things. So it's case by case. And I think you know, I've seen cases where, you know, unfortunately, you know, people were very ill and came to Qigong quite late in their this is to my teacher's classes, quite late in their illness. And he knew they couldn't be helped. You know, it was too late to actually save them, in inverted commas. But what happened was they went, you know, they departed in a very peaceful, beautiful, calm way. Whereas sometimes when we get very ill, there's a lot of fear around it, mm-hmm. a lot of anxiety. And actually it's an honor and a beauty to observe sometimes how we can just accept a certain situation and go with it. So Qigong can help in early stages, you know, middle and late stages. And I think whatever's needed, you know, if we're learning the principles well, we can use it at any stage. And that's what I love about it, and that's what I've seen. And I think, you know, it's quite unusual in that respect.
Yeah. So it, in a way, it's a very generalized thing, which it applies to people actually whether they're healthy or ill. But it is a resource for people who are ill, who say they have cancer. And from what you said, they can use this almost any time in some form, which is pretty good. I mean, that's obviously an important thing, that they are able to do that. They're just lying in bed, for example. Back to the specific side of it. So literally, if somebody was thinking, they had to deal with, say, fatigue, you know, that's a classic symptom of cancer treatment. And as it gets later in stage, it can be of the cancer as well. It's a terrible thing that actually blights people's experience completely. Is this something which they could actually think, well, I'll try Qigong for this?
Yeah, I think one thing I didn't mention earlier is when we connect with this energy, the chi is human energy, then the chi is also in the universe, but actually it's in the earth and in the heaven in Chinese. That's the yin and the yang. And the earth is actually what supports us. You know, when we stand on the earth, mm-hmm. we walk on the earth, it supports us. And when we, in Qigong often, when you connect with the earth well, whether sitting or standing, you can actually absorb quite a lot of energy from the earth. In other words, the earth is always there to support us and give us energy. If we can sit or stand, you know, truly present on the earth nourishes the body and energizes the body, a bit like a tree that's absorbing water and nutrients. Right. Humans are the same, but we tend to be slightly cut off. You know, we're up in the head, you know, we're thinking, and our attention isn't truly on this connection. So even if somebody's quite ill, but they go for a walk in nature and just sense this connection with nature, with the earth, as we know, that's also very healing. So I'd say it's a kind of to remind ourselves that the universe, the earth, is always there to help us. It's up to us to just open up and realize this is our natural state, you know, is that we are always connected, but we've forgotten, you know.
Very interesting. And you're right. Those kind of things, the fact that the immense effect nature can have on our well-being is beginning to be quite widely understood now, which is exciting. Tell me also, I'm still harping on about specifics. I'm just interested to see how this relates to them. I mean, another thing that an awful lot of people with cancer have to deal with is pain of one kind or another. Would this be a useful thing for helping with pain?
Yes, I think so. Look, I think all the things you're going to tell me, I'll say yes.
I suspected as much.
because I just believe when we connect with ourselves on a deeper level, actually the body, the heart, the body knows, you know, what we need. The body is so miraculous, but you know, we're led to believe by media, society that we're a bit, you know, more helpless than we are. So Going back to the pain, I think that one of the things about pain, there's a few things to few ways to deal with it. I mean, in my own practice, I've done practices where I've had to sit for like 2 hours, you know, a long time, and the pain was so excruciating. Now, you know, either if I moved, the pain got worse. So if I stood still, somehow, when I went into the pain, you know, mentally just connect with the pain, the pain seems to, and I gave it space, it seemed to kind of subside gradually. Then I'd get pain somewhere else. Then I'd go into that would subside. So sometimes it's okay to kind of go into it, give it space, give it attention. And I think often pain can dissolve gradually in that way. Or the other way is to put the attention somewhere else. So for example, if the pain is really excruciating, we go into the body, go into our breathing and switch into a different mode, if you like. When you're switched into a different mode, we can detach from the pain. Doesn't mean that, you know, it's no longer there, but actually it's a choice. And I've heard of, you know, Buddhist monks, you know, riddled with, you know, cancer and pain, and they never mention, you know, it's like it's not there, you know, it's like disconnecting from it. So either giving it space, going into it, you know, allowing it to dissolve, or focusing on something else, the breath, they focus probably on compassion, on other things. When we put the focus on something else, I also believe the pain can subside. And thirdly, I'd say a gentle practice, like moving the energy through the body so the pain can move through and out. So generally, the energy goes through the body from the head down to the earth. So if the pain, for example, is in the leg and the knee, you can do an exercise to move it through and out. It needs to flow. Again, a bit like the water. Imagine a river flowing, carrying the pain out and away. So there's various ways, I think, it could be dealt with.
Okay. You've mentioned a few times the immune system. So what's there seems to be a connection here. Obviously, there's a connection between this life force and the health of the immune system. Do you want to say a bit more about that and its implications in terms of recovery, prevention, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think this is a really one of my favorite topics. I met a Qigong master, another one, a couple of years ago, who he studied the white blood cells, you know, our immune system, you know, the white blood cells, how they help to protect us, etc. And he said that when we're born, our DNA has the same, you know, each cell has the same DNA because one divides into two. That's biology, isn't it? Then two into four, you know. But within a minute of birth or so, our white blood cells have a different DNA. And science can't explain that, you know. And he studied this for like 15 years, you know, looking into it. Mm-hmm. And he calls this, he's French, so he calls it le souffle de Dieu, God's breath.
Okay.
You know, our white blood cells changing their DNA within a minute of birth is like God breathing on us, saying, here you are, here's your immune system. Mm. And one of the things, not just in Qigong, but any practice, even if we don't do Qigong, is if we are ill and suffering, is to realize the white blood cells are working so hard to keep us healthy. They go to the place that's needed. And if we can connect with these, you know, he calls them our angels. If we can connect with, you know, these white angels in our body and be grateful to them for the work they do, they'll actually work better and harder for us. Sometimes we have resentment when we have illness, or we feel, you know, upset, scared, all these things. One of the things he says, you know, like at nighttime we go to bed, just be truly grateful to your immune system that keeps you alive day by day. After all, if anyone's listening to this or here, there's always hope. The DNA, the white blood cells can always do more work, but they will do better work if we're grateful to them and connect with them on a daily basis, so they can go to where is needed and, you know, multiply and keep us even more vibrant. And I just love that kind of idea that the body is working so hard to keep us healthy on a daily basis. Be grateful to the body and especially to those white blood cells.
Interesting. So that's what you were referring to in our correspondence before the show. You mentioned the energies of gratitude. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's a specific thing for, I'd say, you know, to keep us, you know, healthy before, say, go to sleep in the day, to have that sense of gratitude. But actually beyond that is, you know, if anyone is, you know, if we're listening to this, if we're on a computer, on a phone, we're in a home, there's a car outside, we have more than, you know, 90% of people in the world have. So actually, it's gratitude for the things we take for granted. You know, we might criticize national health, you know, so many things. We are so fortunate that we're still here, we're still breathing, we still have hope, you know, each and every one of us. So actually, when we're grateful for the things we take for granted every day, it raises our vibration. Our energy is different. We attract different things. The body recognizes the gratitude, and definitely we will feel, you know, more positive and more energized.
Okay. So just want to check back on one thing. You said basically the picture you painted so far is that Qigong is good for everybody all the time, wherever they are. Is that actually true? Are there any sort of contraindications, any situations that are just not right for Qigong?
I'd say not, but there is one thing to be careful of is that some people learn Qigong, say they go on YouTube and they learn a martial arts form that exhausts them. They say, oh, I've got pain in my knees because I did this for 2 hours. You know, you have to be very, I'd say, be cautious, you know, what Qigong you're doing, who you're doing it with, you know, learn the principles well. So I would say don't just, you know, grab a book. I've known people who've done it from books and actually got into some trouble, who've done it from YouTube with people they didn't know, got into some trouble. So take time to, you know, either find a good teacher or a good group you feel comfortable with, and then the practice can benefit you. But as I said, if someone's doing a martial arts qigong and they're really weak and recovering from cancer, that's probably not the ideal one. You know, it probably needs something that is more calming. So ideally, a qigong form that has some movement, some stillness, and it can be adapted to different situations. So although it's good for everyone, you do have to be a bit cautious, I would say.
Okay. So we've not got so much time left, but I want to ask, you know, in practical terms, if I was interested in learning more from you, say, what would happen? Would I go to some kind of group class, or do you work with people one-to-one? And if I came along, what would I expect?
Okay, so I do some workshops in London, in Canterbury. I'm doing a retreat in Sardinia in October. That's my first kind of weekend retreat. And I teach online as well, you know, one-to-one. So group work, you know, one-to-one online or in person. And in a class, for example, if I had, say, 10 people in a class, I have had people, for example, you know, with cancer or with ME, and you know, they can sit, for example, while others are standing. And, you know, if they feel stronger, they can stand. And sometimes people are very surprised how much they can do considering, you know, their condition. So if you like, the energy field is created in the class where people can benefit no matter what their condition. So if they're very ill, they could sit or lie down and still get a benefit. If they're, you know, fit and healthy, they can do the movements. So it's some movements, some breathing, some meditation, and each section, if you like, each practice has a reason to you know, for being, to help the body to heal. And as I say, learning the self-healing form. So when they go home, you know, they can do it, for example, lying down, they can do it sitting down or standing up.
All right, okay.
So, Robin, I just have had an idea actually last night about doing a quick 5-minute meditation on gathering the energy back to the body and pacifying the heart and purifying our blood through breathing. So lots of things in a short meditation, if you'd like to try that.
Okay, let's do it.
So the heart is obviously on our left-hand side. If we close the fingers on the right hand, put it over the heart on the left-hand side of the body. Put the right hand on top, put the left on top of the right. Then put the right hand on top of the left. So if we start again, close the fingers, right hand over the heart, left hand on top of the right, right hand on top of the left. So we end up right on top of the left, over the heart on the left hand side. So this is where we tend to, if you like, leak a lot of energy on the heart side. So by doing this simple, if you like, gesture, we're calling the energy back to the center of the body, to the heart and to the center. So two hands over the heart, and then breathing, we can just deepen the breathing using the nose. So breathing in through the nose, you imagine breathing fresh air into the body from far away, from the distance. Breathing in through the nose is fresh air in. Breathing out from the nose is, if you like, stuffy air out. So if we can focus a little bit on the breathing, fresh air in, stuffy air out, using the nose. So this is helping to purify the blood with this kind of breathing, because we tend to breathe in stuffy air, breathe out fresh air. In Buddhism, they talk about illness being like smoky air. So you can imagine breathing in light or fresh air through the nose, breathing out smoky or stuffy air. And just allowing the whole system to settle. So the hands being where they are is calling back the energy to the body. Often it could be, you know, emotions that we're having trouble with, physical energy. This is actually settling everything down. We imagine smiling, the eyes can be closed, smiling with the eyes, smiling with the mouth. And when we smile, actually, the whole body tends to relax more. Imagine every cell smiling. And then we can just give this hint to remind ourselves to be grateful to the white blood cells, the immune system that's keeping us alive now, that's working day and night to keep us alive. When we feel gratitude, it's actually raising our own energy or vibration. Might feel a lightness, more peaceful. And the breathing can just continue by itself. Don't have to think too much. Allow it to happen by itself. So this could be done at night, it could be done in the morning. I think nighttime is one of the best times actually for this kind of meditation. When we're tired at the end of the day, we're gathering the energy back to the center. It can help us sleep better, feel more together, energy back to the center. If we put the hands in a praying position in front, gradually push them down 2-3 times, push the hands down, detach, move the fingers, just become clearer. So it's a combination of breathing and sensing this gratitude, and resting the hands over the heart, calling back any energy that's depleted, that's been actually leaking, usually tends to be more on the left-hand side, which is the delicate side where the heart is. So if we move the fingers, just become clearer. So we move the fingers. All the fingers relate to the internal organs, to the senses. So in Qigong, we do a lot of exercises with the fingers. When you move them, you just come back quickly to the body, to mind being clear. Just feel a bit more calm, centered, grounded, hopefully.
Okay.
And obviously it can be done for longer if people are, you know, are really into the practice. It's always good when we're still, it settles everything down, the emotions, and but it doesn't have to be done for too long, actually.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. Maybe we could just round off. If you could just tell everybody some ideas for resources for people who are interested to look further into Qigong.
Yes, I'll mention a couple of books. Firstly, my website is flowinghealth.co.uk. On YouTube, I have a channel which is also called Flowing Health. And on that channel, there's quite a few short videos. And the most watched video, interestingly, is how to transform your food into energy. So it's a digestion qigong, and actually for people suffering, feeling maybe not so strong, even if they eat a little bit, if they can strengthen the way the food is transformed into energy, that would be very helpful. So if you have a look, it's on the YouTube channel, and you can just follow it and practice, and you'll notice that it can actually help you to firstly, digest your food more quickly, transform it into energy more quickly, and it's a very effective one. So I'm adding more and more videos onto YouTube as a resource, for people to follow. Clearing headaches. There's a qigong for clearing headaches. So lots of different ones on there. Okay. And books, as I said earlier, the danger is that if people try and learn it from books, then they can go slightly off track. You know, yeah. Ideally, it's best to learn it from a teacher. Directly. And there's a very good one called The Root of Chinese Qigong, which is on Amazon as well. The author, Dr. Yang Jingming. So this is like the principles of qigong, because I think it's important to read about the principles, how it works.
That's excellent. All right. Well, look, we're going to have to leave it there, Alessandro. It's been really interesting. You've spoken about Qigong very clearly. It's brilliant. I feel like I know a lot more about it than I did. And having a guided meditation on the show, that was a first. Great. Thank you very much.
And can I, Robin, leave everyone, you and the listeners, one of my friends went to China and asked, what's the most important thing about Qigong practice? And she was quite surprised by his answer. But sometimes Qigong is an idea or something inspiring or having a vision that, for example, the cancer can clear, quickly. Why not? Well, if things can come, they can go. So have a vision of something inspiring. And he said, the most important thing about the practice, and I think probably in life, is he says, always keep a smile in your heart. So I would say to the listeners, no matter what your situation, just mentally think, have a smile in your heart. Allow your heart to be open, to receive. The more you receive, the more you can give. And that is the most powerful healing, healing the heart, keeping it open, keep a smile in your heart always, and life will definitely turn out better.
Thank you very much, Alessandro.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for having me on the call.
Well, Alessandro is a great communicator, and I certainly do know a lot more about Qigong than I did. I shall be adding some links to the show details on the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, just click the link to the Yes to Life show that's on the homepage. Some links that Alessandro has passed on for listeners. Thanks so much for listening today. I look forward to talking to you again next week here on the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.